I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. If I don't sound like Carrington, that's because, damn it, I'm not. Sports Machine Sean Levine, C-Dot's got the day off, but look what the cat drug in. Jay Binkley sitting here with me. So I'm totally sick and tired of hearing about Alex Golden, his 16-inch vertical. I was looking up things that are 16 inches online, and
that could be dangerous.
I think the boss is going to call
They'll
me.
They'll have IT at your desk.
Yeah, I think he's going to call me in. You know, I did find out that a bowling pin is about 16 inches. This dude couldn't jump over a bowling pin. But then you tell me right before we come on the air that they're working out some sort of like a Binkley-owned combine that we're working on for St. Patrick Mahomes Day.
Yeah, see. There's certain things that I think I could excel in. Let's put it this way.
So you get to drink beer against people on Zoom?
Maybe. We'll find out. There's no details on it yet, but I'm very excited about it.
You're going to get super drunk, and there's no way that there's anybody in Kansas City that can chug a beer faster than you.
No.
There's no way. I've seen you chug a beer, and there are certain things that certain people do that nobody else can do better than, and nobody can chug a beer faster than you. It's humanly impossible.
In life, you have to go pro at something that is the something.
All right, so we got a lot to talk about today. Rob Brennan on the buttons as usual. Your calls and texts, 913-576-7610 on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. So, Bink, before we get too far into this thing, I think that for a team that's been to back-to-back Super Bowls, the Chiefs certainly has some needs this offseason. So if you could, give me your top three in order, and then I want the solution for them, because me and Carrington break down all the time, well, what are they going to do about offensive linemen? Well, what are they going to do because their linebacker core sucks? Well, how are they going to add to a wide receiver? Tell me what you would do.
First of all, it'd be offensive lineman at 31. Not even a question. I'm not talking right tackle. I'm talking left tackle. I mean, that is the key. That's what you want to find. Like a Tevin Jenkins. A lot of people put him there. I like him from Oklahoma State, but played a lot of right tackle. Right? Lucas Niang played a lot of right tackle. That's something to be concerned about, because if Mitch Schwartz, having a surgery yesterday, if he comes back, this is huge. This is huge for the Chiefs trying to find two tackles.
Oh, yeah.
Because free agency-wise, you're not going to spend the money and find that left tackle. Whether it's Martinez Rankin that's better on the inside, Yasir Durant that's already here on the roster, was a left tackle at Missouri for 2.5 years. But I spend pick 31 on an offensive lineman.
Yeah, to me, that's scary. And if the lineman's good enough, like Eric Fisher was, but he was the number one overall pick, then cool. He's ready to go right away. You're cool with the rookie going out there and protecting Patrick Mahomes' blind side? Because I think that we saw in the Super Bowl that if you don't have a left tackle, then go out there and at minimum be Eric Fisher. It screws with everything.
It's tackle, tackle, tackle. I'm not so concerned. I know that it's been thrown out there about Landon Dickerson. He's a center from Alabama. He won the Remington this year. They have a center, because we all know the flexibility.
The fact that you know all these college offensive linemen is mind-boggling.
Creed Humphrey,
dude.
The center. Is,
goodness.
But look at their guards. Alec Reddy, he proved he's a starter.
Yeah.
Alec Reddy has proved his worth. He is a starter in this league. And at right guard, you get the doctor coming back. And not only that, but you have healthy competition with him and Andrew Wiley. Because Andrew Wiley, not as good at tackle, and we saw that. If Mitch Schwartz comes back, it solves a lot of problems. But I spend pick 31 on offensive line. I'm staying at tackle, too. I know there's versatility when you talk about the interior part of the line. I don't think it's as pressing as a need for the Chiefs on the interior than at left tackle.
All right, so they get the left tackle with their first pick. Crazy, because I think that the best way to get a left tackle is, and C-Dot and I have talked about this the last few days, there's got to be somebody out there that's a veteran, that's maybe coming off of an injury, that you don't need to break the bank for, that you can maybe sign to a 2-year, even a 1-year prove-it contract. Now, I wish I was like you and I could actually name the person that I'm talking about. I'm kind of talking about, you know, this perfect situation for the Kansas City Chiefs.
If they let you assimilate back at guard, that would be huge for them, because then they could really, have some, again, competition at left guard and right guard.
I'd be cool with that.
Yeah.
Kale was good.
Kale was great.
And he was mean. Super mean. He was nasty, and that's what this line needs.
Right. I think Allegretti was the second nastiest.
All right, so that's number one. What's the second biggest need this team needs, and how are you going to fix it?
By the way, the player you're describing is Cam Irving. Cam Irving fits the bill. I would love to see the Chiefs bring Cam Irving back on a one-year.
No.
One-year,
no.
Two and a half.
No.
One, two and a half.
He made one soundbite in
laughing
Cleveland.
I'm not laughing at him.
One for two and a half. Cam Irving is great.
When he was in Cleveland, they put him at center, and he goes, I'm on the outside. I'm on the outside. Because being the center, you have to make the line calls. When he said that he wasn't exactly apt to doing that, that kind of was a red flag to me. And then Austin Ryder took his place for one game and tore his ACL when they were in Cleveland. And we all know the story. Austin Ryder comes here and becomes Mahomes'
center. At least I appreciate my boy Rob throwing out a solution.
Cam Irving was good last year for the Cowboys. I mean, he was a fine player for the Cowboys last year. Only gave up one sack, only had one penalty. He played 280 snaps. He's a perfectly capable one-year option at left tackle.
At best, I would say it's a stopgap to get to the next guy, but they don't really solve the long-term problems. All right, number two, what would you take care
number
of?
Two is,
number two
is edge rusher for sure, but where are you going to get him? If you go to 63, because 31, I already have him get an offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
In edge rusher, you can't exactly go in the free agency. Okay, Justin Houston, let's bring you back and get some more sacks.
Ooh.
But it sounds like he's going to more likely stay in Indy. But the top pass rushers are going early in the first round. And usually I look at it, Sean, and you look at the top 20 sackers in the NFL, and a lot of them are first-round picks. I mean, you have got to get him 31, maybe at 63 with the Basham from Wake Forest. With Survive Russo, you're not going to get from Miami.
Edge
rusher is a pal dream.
Back at Schnucks in 1995, it was my first job.
Was it?
On 119th Street.
Yeah,
paper or plastic. I could double it for you. I'd take it out to your car, the whole thing.
And I re-signed Taco Charlson for another prove-it deal because they thought he had a chance to prove it this year. Got hurt with the ankle. Bring him back for that interior, more that defensive line, defensive end type of rush that he can provide. The other pressing issue, though, because I kind of have four instead of just three.
Okay.
Kind of got four because I think there's four ways they could go. The other one is wide receiver. And listen, Juju Smith-Schuster is a pipe dream. That's the guy. I told you that's the guy.
Pipe dream because he's too expensive?
Yeah, he's going to be too expensive because he can play inside, outside. He said he wants to stay in Pittsburgh. I'm not buying it. But he's tough. But drafting a receiver because the receiving class is actually pretty deep. I mean, what's deep is offensive line and wide receiver are deep in this year's draft. And, heck, in the third round, you can get a good wide receiver. Or instead of that, if you went the tight end route, which I'd rather him do than wide receiver, and the reason I'm saying tight end and wide receiver, because the Chiefs use the tight end like a wide receiver, like Brevin Jordan. He was at Miami, and the Chiefs have had interest in him. Like they've been contacting and looking around and snooping around Brevin Jordan. He's the tight end at Miami, probably the third best tight end in the draft behind Pat Freiermuth, who's a baby Gronk that was at Penn State. Probably a second rounder, and Kyle Pitts is going to go top 10 from Florida. And
Hunter Henry's a free agent. You think he'd come
you're
here?
Not getting him. I wouldn't do that. I'd do it to the draft. Because, again, with the salary cap coming down like it is, almost $18 million, I mean, it's through the draft. And I think the Chiefs need to be thinking about the future of that position. Now, they didn't have to deal with that future because Travis Kelce's utilizing this offense. The tight end is very important in the Chiefs' offense.
Oh, I know. See, that always talks about a number two wide receiver, and I'm like, got a number two wide receiver. His name's Tyreek Hill because their number one's name's Travis Kelce.
If you went double tight, they wanted to use double tight ends. I mean, they wanted Nick Kizer to be something better than he was.
Yeah.
They wanted Deion Yeldon to be better than he was, Ricky Seals-Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, they have thrown darts at the tight end, but having a number two tight end. And the Chiefs, you know, they're lucky. Travis Kelce's been very stable. He's not been hurt.
Bring back the belldozer, baby.
He was first in the AFC in receiving yardage 2 years ago. He's second in the NFL in receiving yardage this year. That's how important the tight end is for this offense.
Let me tell you why.
It's imperative. That's why I think tight end should be addressed within the top three picks.
If it's a tight end, if it's a wide receiver, as long as it's a pass catcher, it's going to be on the field, whatever. I would address that first, and I would address it in the draft, and let me tell you why. And I know that I'm kind of on island here. People are like, no, I would not take the number 31 pick or trade up a little bit to get that wide receiver or tight end. And here's why I would do it. Because it's not, in my opinion, an immediate need. It'd be great if he can hit the field right away and even do what Hardman did the first six games of his career, or just dream with me what DK Metcalf's done so far in his career. If you can get that guy in the first round, awesome. But what's more important is you don't have to pay him a bunch of money. He's going to be on a rookie contract, right, for the next 4 years. So it's not like you're paying him Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce type of money. And as long as in the next couple of years, when those guys get older and their contracts start to run up and they kind of phased out a little bit, then that guy can step up. Again, if he's ready to go, great. But I think the Chiefs have more pressing needs in the draft or even through free agency when it comes to plugging holes right now. Like, to me, You have to get offensive linemen. You can't mess around. If you don't go out there and address the offensive line, and I'm not just talking about one guy, I'm talking about two or three, you're figuring out the contracts with everybody, then you're not doing it right, because it's a Ferrari without the keys if you don't have the right offensive line. We saw that in the Super Bowl.
That's why having a proven pass-blocking tight end that's also a great catcher when you have both mixtures. Think about it, though. Extra help with the tackles. The Chiefs need that extra help with running the football and everything, 12%, having that extra tight end in the game to help out with the pass blocking, help out with the run blocking. I mean, that's the tight end to me is more resourceful than the wide receiver for the Chiefs offense to supplemental help that tackle. If you're kind of going iffy on left tackle and right tackle, if Mitch Schwartz is not ready, having that second blocking tight end very imperative for this offense.
So there have been a lot of things in the history of Kansas City sports going back to, well, as long as I've been watching, where if just one thing had changed, like let's say the Royals, oh, I don't know, send Alex Gordon. Let's say that D Ford, oh, I don't know, lines up on the right damn side of the ball. What would that have led to? What kind of changes would it have meant? Good? Bad? You got any? Hit me up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. What are your biggest Kansas City what ifs? 913-576-7610. Because I got a couple for you, and so do the guys. And some of them are going to make you really happy, and some of them you may shed a tear. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's good, the neighborhood? With Jay Binkley, Rob Brenton, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, take you up until 6 o'clock here on The Drive, 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com. And guys, I don't know if you know this, we're being heard all over the world online on the radio.com app. St. Patrick Mahomes Day here on 610 coming up Wednesday, March 17th, of course. The top 50 plays countdown going on all day. You can vote on your top 10, your favorite play right there at 610sports.com. I know mine. What is yours? We'll talk about it as the show rolls on. Thank goodness that the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes and not the situation going on in Houston where Deshaun Watson is now he's straight up, according to Dan Graziano, he straight up told his coach that he is not going to play for him. He's not interested and he wants out of Houston. So any of this speculation of, well, he's going to stay because he's under contract and come hell or high water. Look, man, it's just like any of us at our jobs. And depending on how important you are and how much you get paid, you have to be somewhat happy at your job. Like, look, if you're getting paid a ton of money and your job sucks, there's some jobs that are like that. Basically, you get paid because your job sucks or it's difficult, it takes a lot of schooling, or there's risk or whatever it is. But if you're just not happy every single day you go in, you can't really do that well. So if you've got Deshaun Watson, who's a top five quarterback, who's 25 years old, who's under contract, it's basically what every team salivates and dreams over. It sucks for Houston that they screwed this thing up as royally bad as they did, but they got to get rid of him. At this point, your alternative is to keep this pissed off employee who is not going, it's not going to work. So at this point, man, I don't know exactly where he's going to end up. I don't know where Russell Wilson's going to end up. Maybe just a straight-up swap or something would be best for both guys. But, yeah, he's done with the Texans. That's it.
Can you imagine Dave Coley putting all that time he is, 65 years old, finally getting that chance to be head coach, and you got Deshaun Watson as your quarterback, and you got your quarterback, which he knew that it was a tenuous situation when he sat there. But now these guys have egos. They probably thought they'd fix it. Can you imagine sitting down with him and saying, I'm not playing for you. Go find another quarterback, Dave. And then Dave going, here's Deshaun Watson. you know, this franchise quarterback telling you after you get your first crack at being a head coach after all those years saying, I want out of here.
Well, to be fair, when he took the job,
he knew what was going to happen, but he probably thought he could fix it.
Yeah.
Most guys think they can fix things.
Yeah. Well, that's his fault. If you thought you could fix the Deshaun Watson Houston situation because you're David Coley, then I'm sorry, David Coley. You were just wrong. So going into the break, we were talking about what ifs, Bink, and I know I've had some stuff with women over my lifetime. So have you. Mm-hmm. Rob, I'm sure, at some point.
Fair.
And, you know, with just a lot of what ifs that we always ask ourselves. It's not always about the good times. It's about the bad times. So text me. Now we're talking sports, not women. Jay Southland, Toast Service text line, 913-576-7610. What are your what ifs, KC sports fans? If this would have happened, I wonder what it would have led to. So we're getting a lot of these texts. Somebody says from the 913, if we had drafted Lindor instead of Bubba. Well, I think it's fair to say at this point, Jay Binkley, that Francisco Lindor would have been a better pick than the Gardner Edgerton star, two sports star, three sports star, Bubba star. I think we now say that officially.
That is tough to do in Major League Baseball.
That's true.
Because Mike Trout wouldn't be going in the 20s either.
Let's see what else we got here. D Ford lining up on sides. We would have two rings. Definitely. I know people say, well, they still would have had to win the Super Bowl. They would have. From the 816, if Gannon would have played in the 1997 playoff game against the Broncos instead of Gerbach.
I'll buy that one.
You know who else
will buy
that one? I
think half the clubhouse, Rich would.
Oh, man, Rich will buy that one.
You bring up Gerbach to him, and he's been doing that for years.
It's weird because
hot button.
Rich is a very cerebral. Yeah. How about that? Triple word score.
He's pissed.
He gets pissed when you bring up that whole Gannon thing. Yes. You know who else does? My grandpa Lee, who's like 92 years old. You bring it up to him right now, he gets pissed because I think there's a lot of people that believe that that team actually had a chance not just to go deep in the playoffs, but to have a Super Bowl parade. And that decision ended up maybe costing him.
Seeing his success when he left here, that hurt. That hurt.
Oh, well, yeah.
That MVP season was a constant reminder of just being pissed.
It took him 5 seconds to win the MVP. Didn't he win the MVP that next season?
Yeah, it was tough.
It didn't take too long. 1993 defense, if it was a little bit better. What if we had drafted Marino? Keep those coming in. I got one for you.
The Royals did, though.
Good call. I got one for you.
Elway, too.
This is a little bit more recent. And a lot of people talk about this, and I always say shut up, so I'm going to be the one who brings it up now. What if the Chiefs had drafted DK Metcalf a couple of years ago instead of Mecole Hardman? So Mecole Hardman, I thought the reason they drafted him was because the Tyreek Hill stuff was going down. They had 2 second-round draft picks. Remember, they also got Thornhill in that draft.
Before Metcalf.
Yeah, and they decided, you know what, we'll go out there and draft the wide receiver that we like that's there on the board. The closest guy to Tyreek Hill. And really, the truth is, there's not a lot of guys that can do what Tyreek Hill can do, but size-wise and speed-wise, he's pretty damn close. I thought that's what they were doing, instead of maybe being broader and just taking a guy who a lot of us, including you, I remember you were saying at the time, well, why not take DK Metcalf? We were getting a bunch of texts that were like, hold on, who's this Hardman guy? Why not DK Metcalf? And now, every time I bring up Hardman, we get texts that say, why not DK Metcalf? I'm just saying, while we're doing this whole what could have been, the Chiefs' offense is very good. When they're really clicking, they're great. Man, they would literally be unstoppable if they put Patrick Mahomes out there with Travis Kelce at tight end, Tyreek Hill on one side, and DK Metcalf on the other. What could have been?
Three wide receivers actually taken between Hardman and DK Metcalf. Can you believe that?
Is that right?
Yeah, names like Andy Isabella.
Who?
Paris Campbell.
What?
Yeah. Three wide receivers taken before between Hardman and Metcalf.
Paris Campbell has a chance to be good. He just can't stay healthy.
Who I like Arcega Whiteside. J.J. Arcega Whiteside was the other one.
That's a sick name, though. J.J. Arcega Whiteside.
14 total catches in the NFL.
Oh, well, at least he's got a cool name. All right, Bink, what's your what if?
My what if is, and these are often things that happen in sports, and you wonder, what if?
Mm-hmm.
What if Drew Bledsoe doesn't get hurt and Tom Brady comes in? What if the injury scenarios are always interesting in the National Football League? What if Luke Hochaver in baseball doesn't get hurt? And Wade Davis was this guy that was struggling as a starter. They didn't know what to do with him. They was unsure what they're going to do with him. Ned Yost calls him in the office. Luke Hochaver's getting Tommy John, says, you're going to the bullpen.
Isn't it crazy Wader was a throw-in on that trade originally?
He was a throw-in that became the gem of the whole deal. Right. He goes down in history. He's one of the best relievers ever. Became this HDH, this monster the Royals had. That was almost not to be. If Luke Hochaver,
that's a good one.
Luke was still good, but Wade was elite. Wade was completely elite and a big reason for the Royals' success. So if Luke's fine, I don't know what happened with Wade. I don't know if Wade makes the roster. I don't know if the Royals ship him in some other kind of trade and someone gets Wade Davis. But that day in Surprise, Arizona, when Luke goes down, history in a ring.
Wade Davis and the way that it worked out here in Kansas City just goes to show you that you shouldn't pigeonhole anybody or anything. Sometimes you should just let it go and let the natural course of things work out. Because with Wade Davis, like you said, think about the scenario that it took for him to be the closer on a World Series team and have the best three-year run that any closer in the history of baseball's ever had by the numbers.
Including Holland's injury.
Holland's injury. The trade where he was a throw-in, like you said, moving him from a starter to the bullpen.
Well, they didn't know what to do with
injury. Bro, they were ready to be like, oh, well, we don't know if anybody wants him. Just give us an offer. We'll get rid of him.
Yeah, we'll try Wade out in the bullpen.
And the Royals, let's just call it what it is, don't win the World Series if they don't have Wade Davis. There's a bunch of players on that team that I think – I don't think anybody's going to end up in the Hall of Fame. I think they're all going to end up in the Royals Hall of Fame. But I think there's a few guys that you can point to and say, if he's not on the team, they don't win the World Series. And Wade Davis is certainly
100%
one of those dudes. All right, Rob, what's your what if?
My what if is, what if Chalmers misses that shot in 08? Because I think the way Kansas fans would view Bill Self is similar to how Eagles fans viewed Andy Reid forever. Really, really good, but can't win the big one. Because if Bill Self doesn't get that one, he doesn't have one. And I'm just curious what the fan reaction will be 12 years later, if he was still 0-for in titles. I think it would be like the Eagles fans. They'd be happy, but they'd be restless.
Speaking of KU basketball, they're really the only Big 12 team that was able to coast this COVID year, if you will, without having to replay any games, which means that they've got a week off between essentially now and the Big 12 tournament, or the end of, I should say the end of the season, and when the Big 12 tournament begins. And they've announced a new game that they're playing, a new team on the schedule. Who is it? I'll tell you next, right here on The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back to The Drive. So I asked and you answered on the text line, 913-576-7610, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. What are your biggest what-ifs? In Kansas City, 785, what if the Chiefs drafted Russell Wilson instead of Donald Stevenson in 2012? Do you think that the career of Russell Wilson, Bink, has been better than the career of Donald Stevenson?
Yeah, I do. That's a good one. Because then what would happen? Would Russell have been the difference getting the Super Bowl? Then you'd never have Mahomes.
Yeah, it would never lead to Pat. I actually disagree with that one.
But
it'd be cool for a while, Russell, until it wasn't.
But Russell has gone to two Super Bowls, did win one. I mean...
Yeah.
Has this team been Super Bowl caliber since? No, I think it was the wrong timing. I think the timing was right when Patrick
We'll talk more about Russell.
That is a good one, though.
We'll talk more about Russell Wilson, who, in a roundabout way, could end up in the division. I feel like we say that with every quarterback that's out there. Somebody said, what if Montana would have played the 1995 season? I've always wondered that based on what happened the year before. What are you shaking your head at?
Montana was tapped out, man.
Yeah, that's probably
Montana
true.
Was tapped out.
How about this one? What if Bo Jackson never gets hurt? I've always wondered that too, because he was okay at baseball. He was better than average. He was an all-star and he could hit the ball. He's fun to watch. He was a hell of a football player. Like, he could have ended up being one of the best running backs of all time.
I think the real question is, what if he would have just concentrated on one? What if he just would have concentrated on one? He was elite at both. Well, not elite. He's very good. And when you make the all-star game, in both. He made the Pro Bowl, too. So if he would have just concentrated, he's still one of the best running backs I've ever seen.
Let me tell you about a team that hasn't been elite this year, and that's my Kansas Jayhawks. Now, to be fair, they've been playing better of recent. And the one thing they did better than anybody else during the Big 12 basketball season, there weren't a lot of things. They didn't score. They didn't play defense. They didn't rebound. They didn't get COVID, though. Or they didn't get distracted by other teams and the schedule and all those things. So basically what it means is after the Baylor game this weekend, they got a couple of minutes off. And in college basketball, really, time off is not necessarily a good thing. This is not like a bye in the NFL playoffs or anything. All the time, they play two games in 3 days. UCKU play on Saturday and then Big Monday. NCAA tournament, you could play 4 days in a row. I should say the Big 12 tournament, you could play 4 days in a row. The NCAA tournament, you play two games in 3 days all the time. So it's not a bad thing for KU to play. So they decided, all right, we got a little bit of time. We're looking for an opponent. Who's out there? Now, I don't know if they ever made the phone call to MU, because technically MU is in the process of rescheduling their own COVID BS with either LSU or Vanderbilt. I think they're going to figure out exactly how their schedule plays out before the SEC tournament. But KU added, drumroll please, wait for it, UTEP. UTEP. I know I built that up, but they added UTEP. So I am excited that they get a chance to keep playing. However, there's a chance that I don't think this happens. I really don't think this happens because UTEP's not that good of a basketball team. But did you guys see what happened in the North Carolina Marquette game last night? So it was just a random ass game, right? Like North Carolina versus Marquette. Same thing happened. North Carolina had kind of, they were looking for an opponent. They had a blank spot on their schedule. So did Marquette. They gave him a call, literally 4 days notice. And old Roy picked up the phone and he called, who's the coach over there? Is it still Wojo? Steve Wojciechowski? I loved him. And they're like, hey, Wojo, you want to play the game? And they got together. Well, it didn't work out very well for Roy and the boys out there at North Carolina. In fact, here's what Roy had to say after the game.
What would you say to Carolina fans who are questioning whether or not it made sense to schedule this game considering the result?
Well, if I'd known we were going to lose, God almighty, I wouldn't schedule the thing. Come on, we can't operate in damn hindsight. God almighty. If you'd told me we were going to lose, hell yeah, we wouldn't have played the game. If you'd told me we were going to beat the Lakers, I'd have scheduled them. Carolina fans, they're not that dumb. If they are, I got no answers for them.
I love Roy. I love the way Roy speaks. I think that the thing about Roy Williams and his vernacular, how it's kind of Philip Rivers-ish, Rivers swears up and down that he doesn't swear, that it's just clean, dadgummit, old school fun. With Roy, something tells me that when it's not a microphone, I'm not saying he's at home popping off F-bombs and S-bombs and that type of thing, but I don't think he's dadgumming all the time. I could be wrong.
No, he's not. This game didn't make a whole lot of sense, though. It didn't really help. They were a 10-win team, Marquette was. So it's not one of those margin of victories. Now, they do have a couple nice wins.
And Carolina's trying to rack up wins because Carolina's like all these other blue bloods.
They were 14-7 going in that game. They needed – Marquette was a team with 10 wins. With Marquette, surprisingly – sneaky at times. They've beaten two good teams this year, so it backfired.
It definitely backfired. I hope that it doesn't happen to KU when they play UTEP coming up next week. So we're talking all this, and there was an actual conversation when North Carolina was looking for an opponent, and they put this out there. It was in the campus newspaper that perhaps they would end up playing an intramural basketball team just out there on Chapel Hill. You know, just get the frat boys together, get some homeboys together, and let's just, you know, we need to run. We need a game. Let's just, you know, come on over to the Dean Dome and give us your best five, and we'll get a referee out there, and let's see how this goes. So it kind of made me wonder, what do you guys think was the best intramural sport in college? And Rob and I both went to KU. Bink, I don't know. I can't, you know, it was a long time ago for you. I don't remember what they did back in the 30s when the black and white TVs and the horse and buggy and all that, if they even had intramural sports back then.
Oh, the old buggy races.
But yeah. I can tell you what it was back in my day at KU, and it's not even close. What do you know about Ultimate Frisbee?
I played Frisbee Golf. I played not Ultimate Frisbee.
Completely different game.
Never done that.
Frisbee Golf, for those that don't know, or Frolf.
That's a lot of fun.
Because I'm a big fan, is essentially a free version of golf that you can walk around and do whatever you want to do. I mean, bring your dog, smoke your cigarette, your joint, drink your beer, your Coke, whatever you want to do. That's the great part of it, is that not only is it free, you can do other activities, if you know what I'm saying, Bink, at the same time. So nothing against Frisbee Golf. However, I wouldn't exactly call that an intramural activity in the sense that I'm talking about.
Mine was racquetball. We played racquetball back then. It was a little more popular back then.
I could see you playing racquetball.
Racquetball was fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed a good game of racquetball back in the day. Didn't really understand the rules. I don't think I played it the right way, but I like racquetball. What do you know about pickleball?
Never played that.
It's basically,
I know it's popular now.
It's a game that's played on a racquetball court with like some sort of a worn out balloon looking ball. Again, I don't know what the rules are to that either. I'm just saying, man. So let me tell you about Ultimate Frisbee. It's essentially one guy throws the Frisbee to another and then he can't run. He can take a couple of steps, throw it to the next guy. So now you know what I'm talking about, right? It was an absolute classic on campus.
We did that. We just didn't call it that.
What the hell did you call it?
I don't know.
Do you ever play Capture the Flag?
Absolutely.
Capture the Flag was something that I don't think that I've played since I was – I'm trying to think last time I played. Oh, pre-high school. I don't think I played Capture the Flag since high school. That wasn't really a college game that we played. Let's be honest. Most of the time that college games, you'd start doing something, and then you'd end up inside either drinking your face off or doing some other illegal activity you weren't supposed to do. Like a game of catch in middle school and a game of catch in high school – could turn into a, you know, you get the boys around the block and it turns into a good old school, you know, cul-de-sac baseball game. That didn't really happen in college. In college, it almost always ended the same way, which is, you know what, this sucks. And we're like 19, 20. I mean, 21 years old, of course. You have to be. It's legal.
Yep.
Let's go do something else. So anyway, it made me think about that. What about holidays in college? Do you have a favorite college holiday? Rob, here are your choices. All right. St. Patrick's Day. I don't think New Year's makes the list when it comes to college holidays because the kids are back home. Yeah. So I would say it comes down to St. Patrick's Day, Halloween, or Stop Day. At KU, Stop Day was a huge deal. And when I was in school, Rob, when you were there, was there still the bar on campus? You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, not technically on campus, but there were bars right around campus.
Oh, no, buddy. This was a bar on campus.
I mean, we had the Oread, which is like right there.
Correct. And I guess technically there's a bar inside of the Oread.
So there's where, three.
So where the Oread is used to be a Planet Sub or a Yellow Sub, whatever they call it out there in Lawrence. And it was connected to a, 785, help me out. KU alum, please. 913-576-7610. It was the name of this bar that literally people would go to between classes. And all I know is that when I went to school there, they got rid of it and they built the Oread. And it was a very, very sad day because that was, I'm not going to say it's one of the reasons why I attended KU, because one of the reasons I attended KU is because, well, it's one of the only schools that would accept me. But I did miss that place. My timing was not great. What was the better college holiday? St. Patrick's Day, Halloween, or Stop Day?
The answer is obviously Stop Day. Stop Day was in May. There was nothing to do the next day. Halloween might fall on a Thursday. Stop Day was always an off day the next day. It was the summer, and classes were sparse at best. Day Eve is the best holiday.
What was the best drinking day, the party day during the week at KU? At Pittsburgh, I think it was Thursday.
I ain't going to lie, man. It was during football games. And I'm not saying like before football games. I didn't misspeak. It was during football games.
The night before Thanksgiving is always when the college kids all hit the bars back in their hometown.
Back home,
That's the best holiday in the country.
Yeah.
Blackout Wednesday, that's my day. That's where I thrive.
I'm pretty sure you're making this up.
It is legitimately called Blackout Wednesday.
No, it's not called Blackout Wednesday.
Blackout Wednesday
Nobody's
is a thing.
Nobody's ever heard of what you're talking about.
1,000% a thing.
Although you're exactly right.
The biggest holiday is Missouri S&T, which was Missouri Rolla. That people would go from Mizzou and everywhere down there for St. Patrick's Day. Like they have
it's not bigger than Fake Patty's Day in Manhattan.
I don't know. Down in Rolla, they have a serious St. Patrick's Day.
Have you been there?
No, but I knew a lot of the kids from college would go down there.
I don't know why you're hating on Blackout Wednesday. It's 1,000% a thing.
I'm just saying I've never heard of it. I definitely know what Binkley's referring to when if you're in college.
Rolla's huge.
Our spot. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what you were talking about before. When you come home the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And you got to see all the girls look. They went to different schools. And you meet up with the homeboys. And it's a good old time. My spot was Tanner's on 119th Street. That's probably yours too, Rob. You went to Blue Valley Northwest. Was that your Blackout Wednesday spot?
No. Blackout Wednesday. You don't go there. You go where everyone is. You go somewhere popping off.
Okay.
You go downtown. You go Power and Light. You go to the Plaza. You go to Crossroads. Blackout Wednesday. You gotta be out with the folks.
What's this thing about Rolla? I've Googled it now, and now I'm a little bit interested.
It's huge. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Have you guys ever done Fake Patty's Day?
Once.
And?
It was fine. I didn't love it.
See, that's what C-Dot said, too. It's because you guys did it wrong. Patty's Day is amazing.
I was out there the year K-State was really, really good at basketball, so the bars weren't, like, packed. It was, like, for the event.
People got to be a little more specific. They've been good at basketball three times.
2009 and 2010.
Oh, Michael Beasley.
No.
Oh.
It was the year they went to the Elite Eight with Jacob Pullen.
Oh.
Like, they were really good that year.
Will Spradlin?
No, we'll find something on that team.
All right, I'll shut up.
They were really, really good that year. So, like, and they played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, like, the morning kegs and eggs part was super tame because people wanted to remember the senior day because it was Jacob Pullen's senior day. So, it was a really, really big deal. So, like, the morning element was meh. Then from 5 o'clock on, it was like just regular college town partying to me. I was like, cool, the game's over. We're just going to party. That's no different than a regular Manhattan afternoon.
I think the correct answer is Halloween, but I've never done this Rolla thing that you're talking about, so maybe I'll give it a shot.
I haven't either, man.
Bro, there are so many random schools in Missouri that I have not partied at. Now, let's be honest, I'm a couple of years away from being 40 years old, and I got a serious girlfriend, so I don't need to be going to college campuses and partying. But I did that a lot when I was at KU, and I thought that I'd been to all the Kansas ones. Like, you name a random Kansas school.
Did you come down to Pittsburgh?
Yes. Of course I've partied at Pitt State.
Pitt State, you can drink in four states if you wanted to.
What are you talking about?
Go over to Joplin, go down to Arkansas.
Those are cities, not states.
You go to four different states to eat and to drink in Kansas, Missouri, down in Arkansas, and Oklahoma.
Okay,
my bad.
You're right. Those are four states.
Okay. What's the spot in four states?
What's the spot in Oklahoma?
What's that?
Is that by like NEO up in northeast Oklahoma?
Yeah, you can drive around. Yeah, just go across the border. Just drink in Oklahoma. Just have one beer and go.
Hey, speaking of,
you have to go to a bar.
Speaking of beers, coming up,
what doesn't make it fun? Just in your car.
No, you know it's a good party town, and I'm being dead serious when I say this. Fort Hays State, they got like this, like I don't know what it's called. It's basically like a little downtown, like triangle area. And when all the bars get out, bro, it's a good time. Oh, I've never had a bad time partying at one of these random ass college towns in Kansas, whether it was Emporia State, Fort Hays State, Pitt State, you name it. The one thing I regret is there's all these Missouri schools that, like, CDOT spent years of his life at Joplin. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be dead honest with you right now. I'm not sure if that's Missouri State, Missouri Southern State, Missouri Northern, Missouri Western, but all these places exist.
We used to go to Joplin quite a bit in Pittsburgh to do things.
St. Joe's a good time. Well, it used to be before Uncle D's closed. I mean, come on, man. Like
Maryville, I'm sure, is a lot of fun.
St. Joe is not a good time. Don't. If Chiefs camp wasn't in St. Joe, no one would be like, let's party in St. Joe tonight.
I will not let disparage either the home of one Kramer Sandstone.
Yeah, Kramer Sandstone.
Kramer, you can text me.
His name. He is the king of St. Joe.
Well, I don't know about that. Or, I think he's like the jester of the Joe is what they call him.
Really proves my point.
All right. Well, we can get off this and we can get onto my list because, quite frankly, I think this is going to upset a couple of people too. So let me preempt it real quick. So yesterday, Bink, I don't know if you were listening. If you weren't, screw you. You had nothing better to do, let's be honest.
I probably was.
I did a list on my top 10, not favorite, but best Royals of all time. My criteria was that you had to wear the Royals uniform for at least a couple of years. And people were like, how could you not have Frank White on the list? And then we got into it, and I was pointing out that he was like a 250-something career hitter. People didn't like the list. So I'm going to try it again. I'm going to give another crack. Today, we're going to do Royals pitchers with the same criteria. So it can't be Johnny Cueto, okay? You can't have came here for a cup of coffee and then just got out of town. You had to have been here for 2 years. Fire up my beats, Rob. These are, in my opinion, the top 10 best pitchers to wear the Kansas City Royals uniform. First honorable mention, Mark Gubiza. Remember Gooby? Greg Holland.
Where's the ring?
It hurts me to leave Greg Holland off this list because I feel like we were talking about earlier, if there wasn't an H or a D or an H, then I don't know if the Royals win the World Series. I feel like they kind of needed that whole thing where they took a 9-inning game and made it essentially a 6-inning game. The thing about the Royals bullpen back in the day is that, and when I say back in the day, 5 years ago, it wasn't just the best that the Royals have ever had as a franchise or the best that they've had in the American League in a long time. For about a 2 or 3 year period, the Royals bullpen was the best in the history of baseball. And most of the time when you get into sports conversations like that, when you say the best ever, there's a real argument, you know? Except for, like, if you say Jerry Rice is the best wide receiver, people shut up. Or Wayne Gretzky's the best hockey player, people shut up. But most of the time in sports, I mean, hell, I say Jordan's the best basketball player of all time, and see, that claps back. Like, there's another answer. I really don't think there's another answer when somebody says, if you want to talk about, for a 2 or 3 year period, who had the best bullpen in the history of baseball, in the history of the game, you can't see anybody other than the Royals, right?
It was like having an elite quarterback in football.
And then Steve Busby, also on the honorable mention. So there's your honorable mentions. Here's your actual list. Coming in at number 10, Jeff Montgomery. Monty was the closer of my generation before Joaquin Soria and before Greg Holland, then Wade Davis came around. And then a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, he's the guy that's on TV, right, and does the Royals games with the kind of semi-mullet. Is that fair? Semi-mullet for Monty?
It's fair.
I think that's fair. And I also had his milk poster growing up. You know what I'm talking about? In the garage.
All-time saves leader.
At number 9, Dan Quisenberry. Again, it depends on how old you are. If you were more of a Monty guy or a Quiz guy or a Wade Davis guy. Like, if you're my age or say maybe, if you're my age, you're a Monty guy. If you're Rob's age, you're probably either like a Joaquin Soria guy or a Wade Davis guy. And if you're my pop's age, the only answer to who's the best closer in Royals history is Dan Quisenberry and his style. I'm a little bit too young to remember it, man, but it must have been fun to watch the Quiz pitch.
Oh, it was. When the Quiz came out there, I think he's second all time in games played by pitchers for the Royals.
At number 8, the aforementioned Wade Davis. If you want to look at a 3-year time period, Wade Davis was, you could argue, I was going to say the best pitcher in baseball, but maybe that's unfair for a guy that was only coming in one inning at a time. But if you want to look at strikeout to walk ratio and ERA, which every time I talk baseball, Rob always brings up FIP and WHIP and QBR and all these things that I don't understand. I look at ERA and I look at how many guys he struck out, and he was striking out 11 guys per nine innings and had an ERA for a three-year period just over one. I got Wade Davis at number eight. At number seven, Dennis Leonard. Here's my favorite Dennis Leonard stat. In his career, Dennis Leonard not only was a 20-time winner three separate times, which was a little bit different back in the day, he also had 23 shutouts in his career and 48 complete games. I mean, that dude, if he took the hill, he was just going to keep going. He had a great mustache, too. Dennis Leonard comes in at number seven. Number six, Kevin Apier. And the other day, I actually compared Brad Keller to Kevin Apier. What do you think? You like it?
Apier was just different styles, though, because he was all over the place at times. You know what I mean? I think Keller's more controlled.
Body style.
Apier got the job done.
Hard throwers. Apier more than got the job done.
Oh, Apier was outstanding. I don't see the comparison with Keller.
I don't know if I would call Apier a true ace by Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Felix Hernandez in his prime standards, but by Royal standards, Apier was definitely an ace. Yeah,
he was.
Apier's way too low on this list. He leads the Royals' career all-time WAR for pitchers. At six, that's disrespectful.
At number five, Paul Splittorff. I loved Paul Splittorff.
Love Split, too. You're talking about a guy that complete games. He had those 90 complete games. Actually, Dennis Leonard, your guy. Dennis Leonard leads the Royals with over 100 complete games. But Splittorff was a stud.
Had the great glasses. Post-career also. The crazy thing about Split's post-career, remember, he did basketball and he was good. I love listening to Splittorff back in the day. Now, maybe part of it was because I grew up without cable television, so if KU was playing basketball on Channel 38, I was stoked. It didn't matter if it was Splittorff calling the game or my grandmother. I was going to be excited to watch it. You put Rex Walters and Adonis Jordan and Scott Pollard and Greg Ostertag on my TV, boy. That's all I need. But yeah, Paul Splittorff, a Royals great. At number four, Zach Greinke. I've always got a tough time when I put Greinke on one of these lists because Greinke didn't want to be here, and he outwardly said he didn't want to be here. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. Sometimes guys have to leave town, like Carlos Beltran or Jared Allen or whatever. But when I asked Jared Allen a couple of weeks ago when we brought him on, he was like, I didn't want to go. It was just finance. It was just business. It was just life. It's just what happened. In the case of Zach Greinke, Greinke outwardly went up to management and said, hey, I don't want to be here. I don't think I can win here.
But he won a Cy Young, and not only that, he brought in Kanan Escobar.
Oh, the Royals won that trade.
Yeah, two ALCS MVPs.
I say it, and then I look at Greinke's numbers. Both teams won that trade. At number three, David Cohn. Remember David Cohn?
Absolutely.
He was a
true
ace.
David Cohn doing
We're
on this list?
About David Cohn
oh my
won the
God.
Cy Young.
Oh, my God.
David Cohn won the Cy Young.
Oh, my Lord.
And David Cohn was in Kansas City multiple times.
Oh, my Lord.
With the Rockhurst.
And he went to Rockhurst, Rob.
There is no stat that David Cohn's a top 10 Royal of all time, pitching-wise. None. Zeros.
When are you going to be really pissed off when I realize that I put Dennis Leonard at both number seven and at number two. So
Dennis Leonard's fine at two. Okay, I don't know what David Cohn is doing
Dennis
at three.
Leonard, number two also. He was so good.
He had over 100 complete games.
And then
Dennis
at
Leonard.
Number one, Rob, do you have any problem with Brett Saberhagen?
No, but I'm still hung up on what is David Cohn doing on this list.
Rob's the guy that had Chick-fil-A at seventh.
Yeah.
David Cohn. Oh, my goodness.
Bro, you don't like David Cohn?
What is happening?
Give me David Cohn's career numbers. He threw a perfect
game. With the Royals?
No, just in his career.
That's different than with the Royals. By that logic, Zach Greinke should be one. And two should be Cueto.
I don't think you heard the parameters.
That's why I'm so confused why David Cohn is three.
Because you're not smart, that's why.
David Cohn was here for like a cup of coffee.
David Cohn was here multiple times. David Cohn got drafted by the Royals, and then he came back to the Royals. In between, when he was here, the year of the strike,
David Cohn started
Cy Young.
80 career games for the Royals.
Again, this wasn't a longevity thing. Did you not hear the rules? You had to play here for at least 2 years, and then it was the rest of your career.
He's at three.
In Kansas City?
3 years in Kansas City.
Is that more than two?
I'm just saying, he has no business at three.
Again, I don't think you get the game.
None black ink. This is bad.
You're bad.
This is real. Oh, and to do that to Kevin Apier. Oh.
Why do you like Kevin Apier so much?
He leads the Royals all time in career pitcher war.
Okay.
He's the best pitcher in Royals history.
Did Kevin Apier have a better career? I'm not talking about what he did in Kansas City, because Apier also played for the A's and I think somebody else. Who was the better major league pitcher? Was it Kevin Apier or was it David Cone?
I'm pulling up his Apier's numbers right now, but
Bink, chime in. Tell him it was David Cone. Come on. I love Kevin Apier, but it was David Cone.
Yeah, Cone was a stud, man.
Dude, come on. He won the Cy Young. He threw a perfect game.
Apier was just as good. Actually, I could argue he was better because he had a better FIP.
Give me the numbers. Oh, you're stupid FIP. Give me the real numbers.
He was actually better. All right. 3.57 for Cone, 3.8 for Apier.
Okay, then Cone was much better. Get out of here.
Whip 1-2 to 1-2. These are the same players, but one was in Kansas City for a cup of coffee. One spent 13 years in Kansas City.
Cone 16-5 one time with a sub-3 ERA.
Come on, man. He won the Cy Young here in Kansas City. Why do you hate David Cone?
I don't hate David Cone. He has no business being 3 on this list.
I think he was actually 2 and 3. That's the crazy part. That's today's Levine's List. Sorry I pissed you off, Rob. Brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino is where it's at. The question is, where is Russell Wilson going to be next year? There's an actual chance he lands in the division. So we got to bring on somebody from Seattle to talk about it. Up next from 710, Paul Gallant joins the drive.